Rabbi, he is my rabbi, Rabbi Durbin.
That's a great, great intro to the podcast here.
The best looking rabbi this side of the Jordan River.
Welcome, Father Anderson.
The Jordan River. Hey, everybody, this is Father Christian. Next to me is Rabbi Matthew Durbin, best looking rabbi this side of the Jordan River.
The dangers of having too much coffee in the morning. Welcome. We are going to be discussing today something very interesting, very, very non-traditional, kind of looking at Father Anderson's one-man show, Jesus Was Not a Doorman, kind of unpacking that, but going beyond the level of the surface in terms of, you know, Reverend Anderson's own personal journey towards from actor to priest to just awesome friend and just a really good looking guy with savvy hair. So we
keep on calling each other like good looking men. Our wives are going to start to wonder like, what's going? You guys, what's going on over here?
Well, my wife says the same thing every Friday morning. She goes, "Go enjoy your boyfriend. Go enjoy. I know you guys have a lot of good time together. You know, enjoy. Yeah, yeah. But you know, to really look at the show that we're going to be talking about today is, you know, the challenges that we as clergy have in terms of the reveal. How much do we reveal, and how much do you as a congregant, as a parishioner, want to hear of our clergy? Of their sacred past, or even just of their history, their own backstory of who they are and what shaped them to be the leader of our communities that we have today, and kind of using as a catalyst your personal and very personal story that you gave last week to a sold out crowd.
Yes. So that's perfectly said. That's where we're going to go with this. And we are curious to know. And please leave a comment in the podcast, because this is a big question we love to know as a rabbi and a priest here on the show. How much of your rabbi or priest or pastor or imam, whomever it is, a guru, do you want to know about their past? Especially if this is a second vocation or a third vocation from them. Do you want to know about the times of brokenness in their lives? Do you want to know times where they really struggled? Do you want to know when they were involved with things that really didn't match the values of their current call? Does that help you in saying, oh, I can identify with this person? That's what this is all about. So please leave a comment, like this podcast, and share it with others. This is how we grow this community, and we love it when you do. So you can go on whatever platform you're on, just share it away, take a screenshot, send it out to on your social media posts, and say, follow a priest and a rabbi. We would be so grateful. So enjoy this show. God bless you. And if you ever want to become a supporter of the show, right now, just you can reach out to yourfavoritechristian@gmail.com. That's the email where we would be happy to have you to be a sponsor on the show. This is a ministry for us and a continued outreach. So God bless you. And let's get ready to roll on another episode of A Priest and a Rabbi podcast.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart, Florida. This is Rabbi Durbin here from Temple Beit Hayam. And to my left is the greatest priest that I have ever had the fortunate opportunity to spend tremendous amount of time with, which I am so grateful of having Father Christian Anderson join us here in our studios.
I'm the only priest you've ever had to spend this amount of time with.
True.
That's the only choice you have. Have you ever spent this amount of time, quality time, with a priest ever?
No.
Okay. I mean, even if you just, yeah, I mean, come on. Even if we did the show once every 3 months, I'd still be the number one priest in your life.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
I'm so happy to be here, man. Right here on a Friday morning, every Friday morning, hanging out with you, my brother, and I'm so happy you opened the show today. Usually that's me, and I'm so glad it was you.
Well, I'm starstruck this morning.
Starstruck. Well played, my friend. Starstruck.
I am starstruck a little, for some of us who had the very fortunate opportunity to witness and to see you in your one-man show.
Oh boy.
of Jesus Was Not a Doorman at Starstruck Theater on Sunday night, which was awesome. Something that I think for many of us didn't expect. You know, it's for those that did have the fortunate opportunity to see the show, you know, any comments or suggestions or, you know, questions you have, please, the phone lines are open. We are at 772-220-9788. That is the phone number here at WSTU. So we would be more than happy to receive any calls that you have this morning, just so we can kind of unpack the show. Father Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I'm assuming it'd be, there's a lot to unpack for someone. I've been working on the show for 12 years, so it's sort of a little bit of a bit of my life story.
12 years a priest.
Well, no, I mean, I've been a priest for three years, working on four, yeah. And so I've been working on the show for 12, which means I wrote some of it, a lot of it, when I was working as an actor in Los Angeles. And then it would go dormant for a while, and then I'd pick it back up. But then now, it was really on my heart, and then Starstruck Theater was really awesome. It's saying, you know, you can come in and workshop it here. And so I was able to go in there on Fridays and work on the play and work on it. But it was... Listen, man, it's a story of me being a nightclub doorman in Hollywood. It's a story of, I don't really dip into a lot of my acting career in it, but the being a doorman is the vehicle, which is sort of the vehicle of showing this previous life I had. And while you're working in an industry that might not match the values of what you're trying to practice in your faith, do you run the other way? Do you get out of town, or do you try to bring your faith directly into it? Do you bring God into it? And when you have things in your life that could bring a lot of temptation into your life, do you just run the other way, or do you bring God into it and see what comes up of it? So there's in the play, you see where I even try to quit working as a nightclub doorman because I'm just, you know, judging women all night. It did create this club community, nightclub community, and I tried to quit, and my priest was like, "No, man, you got to stay there. That's where the God work is. But don't fall to temptation."
And I would assume too, you know, given the content of the show and you know, the challenges and the struggles that you went through from the transitional period, right, of having that opportunity to, you know, be amongst the rich and famous. In a nightclub setting of letting people in and quotas and, you know, who comes in, who doesn't come in, you know, and I think for some, you know, to go back and to think, you know, when we pull up to that nightclub and there's, you know, 200 people waiting to get in, you know, how do we judge? And I think that was really powerful in your show. Of, you know, the potential struggles that you as a nightclub doorman to that transitional period of looking as a priest, as a man of faith, as a man of God, of B'Tselem Elohim, of everyone created in God's image, but at the same time having the challenge of having to judge people on physicality, what they look like, quotas, don't have too many men, don't have more women, you know, whatever it may be, in order to really have the club at its highest capacity.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that's the reality of the nightclub world, right? You're walking into a world that is just based on, it's a very materialistic culture, right? It's based on an appearance. You're right. Like you said, there's a quota there. It has to look a certain way, has to feel a certain way. And there's a demographic that has to be fulfilled. Women are king or queen, let's say. So everything is really based around what's going to make the woman feel comfortable, because if you do that, then the men will come to the club, right? But if you have too many men coming, then no other men are going to want to come, and women feel uncomfortable because there's too many men, right? So there's this thing you're balancing where you're just trying to create this most amazing experience where people can go, obviously, and have a great time, but there's this gender balance you have to have where the nightclub I worked at, what they went for is that you would have always three women to every guy inside, right? So therefore, at the door, you got to control that. You got to make sure that's what you have. You got to make sure that you're bringing in people who are bringing them with lots of their friends who are ladies. And then you have to make decisions not based on how people look and how they dress and all that stuff, celebrities. And yes, it is. At the time, I think, was I was exploring my faith, is that I just saw the job sort of something that allowed to keep me acting, that allowed me to... It was a side hustle.
How did you find the time? I mean, you know, because as we know, nightclubs, you know, they don't shut down at 11 o'clock at night. And presumably your working day would be in the evening all the way to the wee hours of the morning.
Right.
And then, of course, morning comes and you got your other stuff that you're doing. Where do you find the where did you find the time for yourself from an acting perspective or a involvement perspective?
Well, it was actually a perfect job because you're just working on Friday and Saturday nights, and maybe sometimes just Saturday night, and you can bring in enough money that can really hold you strong for the week. So it really allows you for the whole week to have Monday through Friday, totally good for auditions. If you book a job or book something that's going to be shooting on the weekends, then yeah, you get a cover and you're not there at the nightclub. But usually you're good, and it's perfect because you're not showing up to the nightclub. The one that I worked at, we weren't showing up till about 11:30 at night because it went from midnight to 5. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't hit it. It didn't get crazy until 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. So really it was ideal. What was crazy was then getting up 3 hours later and going to church because I always made it to church.
And just to be clear, that there is a huge difference between what you did professionally and what a bouncer does.
Right.
So you were not, just to be clear, Father Anderson was not a nightclub bouncer.
No. I had bouncers around me. I wasn't the muscle for sure. I might be 6'6", but I wasn't throwing bows. No, I was up there at the front. I had security around me. They would step in if it got weird.
So just as we kind of unpack this, and part of the justification and reasoning for today's show was and I'm sure we all can recall in the back of our minds, you know, a very thought-provoking film that we had seen, and it stayed with us for days. For days, we had thought about it, and you know, got deeper beyond the level of the surface. And part of the understanding for today's show was, it's been about 5 days, 6 days since your performance, and I haven't stopped thinking about it.
Hmm.
And I do want to say, you know, not only on the air, but to you personally, you took a big risk. And something that I'm sure you probably struggled with on how do I show myself both as a now as a priest, but also the fact that as a priest, I was born Christian Anderson. I wasn't born Reverend. It's a title to which you earned later in life. And really to unpack that as in terms of, you know, as a priest and as a rabbi. You know, we had a previous life before we entered into the clerical role that we serve. And I'm just curious for you, what was that in terms of, you know, creating this over 12 years, but really in the last, 6 to 8 months of really bringing it forward and say, I want people to hear my story. I want people to see my story. And I want to do something unique. I want to do a one-man show. I'm going to showcase it here. You know, we had almost a sold-out crowd of, you know, a couple hundred people that came on Sunday night. You know, what was that emotive feeling you were going through? Because I can only imagine that you must have been going through, you know, moments of, you know, exaltation and moments of elation, but also, you know, strong moments of fear of how is this going to be perceived? How are people going to see me? Are people going to treat me any differently after seeing the show? Will it be, you know, for some, a feeling of, wow, this is my priest to whom I confide in. Do you feel that it would change your perception of who you are?
Were you fearful of that? Well, I put on the poster at the bottom. There's strong language and strong adult situations. So I really wanted to prepare everyone who was coming. That gave me some solace. And people would ask me, and I would tell them, just so you know, this is what you're getting yourself into. So there would be an age requirement as well. I didn't want youth group members. I didn't want young ones coming yet, because I want every parent first to come first, if they wanted to, and then make that call. That's not my call. So,
Also with the disclaimer, of course, language and adult situations coming from a priest, you've piqued my interest.
Sure, yes.
You've got my money.
I didn't plan to do that, but sure, it might have helped with marketing. Like, oh, this is interesting, right? I knew that people were curious about, Christian, I've always wanted to know, how did this work? How did you go from actor to priest? How did you go from being in L.A. to coming here? Yes, I was extremely nervous. I was very nervous, and that's why I kept it a secret. That's why I worked on the show by myself every Friday for a couple hours in the theater, in a black box theater by myself. No one knew, and I told the artistic director of Starstruck, just keep it quiet right now. I got the blessing of my rector, the lead priest of my church, to be working on it. Then I finally told him a little bit more about the subject matter. I did a real test case where I brought in like three people from my church, one who has more conservative theology, one who is more moderate, and one who's more liberal, to get their feedback. When they told me that they felt strong, they felt great about it, they weren't offended, I felt better. But still, then doing it in front of 200 people, and many people who know you as their priest, yeah, it was very nervous leading up to it, and there is some strong language in it. And so there was a moment beforehand which is like, I just got to go for it. I'm here. I'm right now. It's like backstage. It's like, just do it. Just deliver your show and go for it. This is something I've been rehearsing forever, and just give it and see where this goes. And I felt confident about that. It was nerve wracking, because the last thing you want to do is to distract someone or offend someone in that situation. But I did a lot of prep work and really try to tell people personally of what they're getting themselves into.
And you know, from the different side, from a different perspective, having your wife present at the show, right? Which obviously, look, you're married, you have a sacred bond and a beautiful relationship. What was that like? And obviously you're not her, but what was that like for her to be able to see your transition, something that you're very passionate and excited about? But it's also our spouse who's seeing the life that we had before. And obviously the life that we have now is different. But what was that like for her?
Well, I think what you're referring to, Rabbi, is that there's a couple situations in the play itself where I find myself being tempted by other women in the story itself. And so you're watching this character who is a person of faith, right? It's not like I have this big moment where I find Jesus and then I'm just converted. No, the character is in love with Jesus at the beginning of the show, but then trying to say, I'm part of this nightclub world and part of this Hollywood world. How am I bringing my faith? Really, how am I bringing my faith into maybe the temptation, into the sin, and how does that change things? So with the female part is, I was nervous at first, like let's say a year ago when I started rehearsing this. And so I started telling Anastasia about the show, and then I brought her to a rehearsal and I prepped her on it. And since this happened like over 12, 14, 15 years ago, I mean, we had a good talk about it, and it was so long ago. I was pleasantly surprised where she was like, yeah, that was so long ago, mm-hmm. right? That was like way before her time. That's right before she was even in this country. And so she was just like, okay. And so it hasn't been an issue for her. She's also a very strong, confident woman, very self-secure, where that kind of stuff is not gonna drive her nuts. You know what I mean?
And you know, through the show, you had shown us as an audience, the challenges that exist within the clubbing world, right? As you mentioned before, you know, there is a perception as you walk into a club of its clientele, of who comes in, who doesn't come in. Look, as a kid growing up in a major city, nothing would irritate me more than standing in line in the pouring rain, waiting to get into that club, and standing there for hours, and then of course three or four or five or six people who happen to just nod and give a wink, get ushered in through and enter into the club, and I'm still standing out there in the freezing, colding rain.
Right.
But you had mentioned as well of, you know, the challenges of, you know, okay, you know, you're very pretty, you go in, you not so much. You know, looking at that dichotomy and looking at that challenge, especially with, you know, you as a man of faith, did that ever challenge you in ways by saying, look, I understand the ways of the clubbing industry, but in the same way as a person of faith and a man who is a God-loving person, of saying, I'm really challenged by this, because who comes in, who doesn't? I'm making a physical judgment on who and what you look like, where we're all creatures of God, we're all created in God's image, and having that polarization of just being really challenged. I mean, did that during the time of your nightclub experience, did that ever pervade your mind?
I mean, it did. There was a part, and there's a part in the play where I talk about this, where I'm really struggling with this. There was a night where I blow up on someone. I yell at the door. I lose it on this guy because he thinks I'm not bringing in his woman because of the color of their skin. But I lose it because it's not because of the color of their skin. It's because they're large, right? And so then in the play, the next scene is me going to church and saying, how do I kneel before the cross? How do I say that, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, when what I did last night, this horrible judging, and I lost and I got angry and humiliated this guy, right? So it's a low point in the show, and it's a low point for me. And I wanted to put that in there, and many other moments to show just when I was doing, just really got lost in the world and not really practicing the values that I wanted as a growing Christian. So I think that's the key. The key is what worked for me in the club world. I mean, it is a very particular audience that's showing up. They know the rules. They know the game we're playing. Right. So at the same time that I'm working in the nightclub, I'm also getting up later and I'm doing a homeless ministry. So I'm doing the homeless ministry, and I also work the door at the homeless ministry. Now, that's a whole different set of values, whole separate set of rules, where everyone gets in. It was a wonderful dichotomy, and maybe it should be added to the show at some point, where like this is just, it's a different kind of way that you got to watch everyone at the door. There's some rules that got to be set. You know, you can't walk in naked. You know, there's different things you got to do there. But in the nightclub world, if someone pushed on this and said, how could you do this as a Christian? It's like people coming to the nightclub world, if you're showing up at a nightclub at midnight in Los Angeles and expecting it to be treated like this is going to be the First Lutheran Church, picnic where everyone comes in, it's a nightclub. Mm-hmm. It's midnight. Do you see everyone around you? It's Los Angeles. So for me, it was like I felt more like I was a casting director, just trying to cast a movie of what it was inside. And yes, at times did it really start to when I had to make those judgment calls. Yes, it was rough, especially if you had to be the person to step in and say it. I think I was growing in my faith at the time. Could I do that job now? No, absolutely not. Right? Absolutely not.
Did that experience in terms of where you are now create more for you, more empathy, more understanding of others in our midst to shape and mold your ministry where you're at now?
Yeah, I think the reason why the show is called Jesus Was Not a Doorman is because, I mean, that's not who Jesus calls us to be. A big theme of the show is about judgment and how Jesus calls us not to be the judgers, right? To look at our own sin and our own issues of our own self before we can even begin to look at the sawdust in someone else's eye. We got to look at the log in our own. So that's an ongoing theme. So, yes, I mean, that is a constant for any walk of faith. Judgment. We get caught up in the judgment card and empathy. I think, so I'm thinking in the moment here, but the experience of being a nightclub doorman, again, was you're providing a service that already is pretty, it's this fantastical nightclub experience, and you're usually not encountering folks who, you're attracting a nightclub group. They know the set of rules. They know that people don't get in. They know there's a long line. They know it's not a charity. So there's not a lot of surprises. There's the thing. If there's a lot of surprises where a lot of people coming up the front and being surprised, obviously when I would tell people they couldn't come in, they weren't surprised. If it was a constant thing or every single night where someone would be like struggling, be like, how could you do what you do? This, that would be a huge struggle, but sort of like you're in this world where everyone knows the kind of the game that we're playing. But does it, is it refreshing to know that I'm part of a line of work where our walk now is of love and acceptance and empathy? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember actually when I came back, I left the club for like 3 weeks because I went on a vision quest, and I just jumped in my car and I drove around the country and I worked at different like homeless ministries and I camped out and I just saw a whole different side of the world, right? A whole different side of life, where it was about accepting everyone where they're at, about meeting people in their brokenness, about being a servant, about where status doesn't matter anymore, right? There's no status. And I remember I came back and I drove back in the morning and I had to work the club that night. And I had asked this gentleman, producer, to stand outside the ropes. And he was struggling so badly. He's like, do not do this to me. You put me on the inside of the ropes when you make me wait. I am not going to wait on the other side of the ropes.
Wow.
And I just kind of snapped. I was like, what does it matter to you if you're on this side of the rope or that side of the rope? This rope is going to just define who you are, your status or whatever. And I just lost it. The other dorm was like, dude, relax. Stand over here. Just take a breather. Because the value system was exposed to me, mm-hmm. right? But I had to jump in my car and drive around the country, leave LA, and experience life for what it really is of humanity all being equal and seeing people in their in really rough situations. And that's the stuff that really matters, not if I'm on this side of the rope or the other.
So I
would say I got caught up into the vanity of the nightclub world and that value system where I just played by their rules for a while. And that can happen for any of us.
Absolutely.
You just get caught up in a world that you're working in and you learn how to play by the rules and you can rationalize it and you don't realize that, you know, that you might be, you, that you're actually kind of pushing back on your own value system that you want to grow into.
Absolutely.
You know?
So for those that do have questions as we press forward and challenge Father Anderson on his journey towards the priesthood from actor to priest, give us a call, 772-220-9788. That's 220-9788. We will certainly take any phone calls and any questions or comments that you have. So please give us a call. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will press forward.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe, and please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained over 50 hours of training to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more the presence of Christ or and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi here on 1450 WSTU. We are so happy that you could be joining us here today. This is Father Christian Anderson from St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and next to me is the best darn looking rabbi this side of the Jordan River. It is Rabbi Matthew Durbin over from Bat Hayam, Temple Bat Hayam, and it's a pleasure to have you here, brother, and to continue part two of the show, where today we're talking about, we've been using this one-man show that I just did this last week as an example to talk about how far, how much for your pastor or priest or whoever the religious figure in your life, how much do you want to know about their previous life? Do you want to know they had a previous life before they became a man or woman of the cloth? Does it help you as a parishioner to know, oh, yes, my rabbi had this whole different life before he or she became a rabbi, and we might look at them as sort of like these sacred figures now, or someone who's the leader of a spiritual quest we take of finding more of God in our life, and they're a model of that. And, you know, we do tend to raise up and look at our religious leaders like they're somehow that they're a little bit holier than thou. Sometimes we get caught up. We all get caught up in that. Let's say we put them at higher expectations. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of that, does it help you to know, you know what? Yeah, my priest had a whole long road to get here. And he or she was doing some stuff that was, you know, a lot different, that maybe didn't celebrate some of the values that he or she celebrates now. Does that bring you comfort? That's the question we want to ask you today and bring that on the show. 772-220-9788. Do you like to know that your priest or rabbi or imam or religious figure had a very different life before accepting the call? And does that help you to be like, you know what, they get it. They've been in some gritty situations,
and I think it goes both ways, right? One is, does it make us connect further to our priest, rabbi, religious figure? Does it connect us to our congregation or to our communities, or does it divide us? Does it separate us and say, you know what, this doesn't really align with, you know, my traditional values, and therefore I'm going to seek elsewhere.
I think the biggest thing would be, If you are still bringing some of those values or representing some of those values or still doing those things in the present moment, like as a hobby or something, then that's going to be a struggle. Like, for instance, so I do this one-man show. I talked about how I was a nightclub doorman. I talked about how some of the things I did there were probably not the most priestly, right? Some of the things were cool because there was faith brought into that. However, if I'm still, as a priest, still finding excitement working in the door of a nightclub, and then on Friday nights, Father Christian actually does do a night over at whatever, Blink nightclub down in Miami, that's going to be a little strange, right? Unless we know that Father Christian still is really into the nightclub world, and he finds it as a ministry, and he's actually a chaplain inside of the nightclub. And because of his experience of working in the nightclub, he learned how to be a chaplain in there. And he's not drinking, he's not drugging, he's not getting caught up in the whole world of sex. He's actually there to be a servant and to love on folks and to be there with them during the most challenging times, because we all know the nightclub world is pretty crazy, right? That's a different story. But just working the front door because it helps his ego and makes some extra cash and whatever, and being around that whole world, that would be, mm-hmm. I would say that you would lose trust in your religious figure.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But I can see with other people, and I've gotten feedback from the show that so far, now there might be others who might feel very differently, and I'm sure I'll hear from them, but so far there's been folks like, it does help them to know that I took this journey, saw some things, experienced some things within the whole craziness of Hollywood, and now saying I'm at a place, hopefully, in emotional, spiritual maturity where God is the only way. But knowing that you went through all that, then, well, you can identify with what I've, what I'm going through.
But, you know, one of the takeaways that I got out of your show, too, was that as a human being, as somebody who has strong faith, is that you yourself chose your own destiny, right? That you had the opportunity to change. And I say this with, you know, next Sunday night will be the dawn of a Jewish New Year as we enter into Rosh Hashanah, our new year, of the time at which we really introspectively look at who we are, right? The challenges we've done in the last year, who we are, who we want to be, you know, and that notion that through your experience that you changed your own destiny based on a confluence of experiences and encounters that brought you to where you are now, which I thought was actually very powerful and very effective. You know, through your homeless ministries of being able to, you know, help and provide comfort and solace for those that, you know, were going through challenging moments of their lives, to be able to say, this is what I need. This is spiritually fulfilling. This is what I'm here for. You know, and I just thought it was just an amazing leap that you went through.
Yeah, and we talked about it before that maybe the show is missing a little more explanation of that leap, because we see me move to the character in the play, go from a place of being this nightclub guy who's doing all this wacky stuff, who then all of a sudden gets to a place of accepting the call to start the process towards the priesthood. And maybe the show needs an extra scene to really show more, even more of that transformation, mm-hmm. even more of why, where does he get that spiritual depth? Where does he get that maturity? Is there another come to Jesus moment that happens? But I hope, and I think this is something we're lifting up today on the show, is when is too much, right? Mm-hmm. When do you as a rabbi, when do you as a priest share too much where your parishioners are just like, okay, whoa, I get it. I mm-hmm. didn't need to know that. I don't need to have that image. I don't need to know that you did that. I just, all I need to know is that, oh, wow, you were once someone who followed fish around and, you know, were a deadhead and experienced that life. Or you were someone who worked at a nightclub door. That's all I need to know. That gives me enough to know, like, you get it. If I bring some gritty stuff into the office and I need to talk to you about some down and dirty stuff, you're not going to be clueless. And I don't feel like I'm talking to some naive guy who's never experienced temptation mm-hmm. and fallen into some sinful places. And you've worked your way to get to a place with God. I mean, that's what we're lifting mm-hmm. up today. When is too much? And if anyone out there has, you know, with your own religious figure, been like, we'd love to know, have you ever had a religious figure in your life, a priest, a rabbi, or whomever, who you're like, you know what, I don't feel like they got anything because I felt like they were just really good at life and really good to two shoes and they never experienced any brokenness or loss. So I want to have someone. Michael, yeah, our producer's chiming in.
Is it a little bit like parents? Because our parents growing up, they have all the answers, everything's fine, they're perfect at what they're doing, and then everybody, as you age, you get to a certain point where you realize, oh no, they're just normal people doing the best they can. Mm. Is it comparable at all to that with people and their religious figure?
Well, I think you bring up a good point, which is parents make that balance as well, where how much of my imperfections or can I reveal to my child or talk about my past to help them in his or her journey right now? Mm-hmm. And without, because they look at me like a superhero, and also I don't want them to lose faith in me as a parent. But for you as a parent to sit down and say, listen, you know, I just want you to know, you know, when I was 16, I got wasted. I really did some stupid stuff. I don't want you to go through that same thing. I want you to be really smart with this, as opposed to saying, I never drank, mm-hmm. never did it, and I want you to drink, you know. But did you know, as a parent, is it good to kind of show your cards a little bit so your kid can, oh, wow, identify with you or maybe form a different bond? I mean, you're the one with kids here, Rabbi.
Yeah, but my kids are also super young. So, you know, they look to me as a superstar every day, which is great. And I hope that feeling and that that knowledge never goes away.
Never, ever.
But, you know, it's interesting. You know, when I was in rabbinical school in London, I remember year one, we were given internships, and I was interned in a synagogue. And You know, the rabbi had said, I want you to give the sermon on Friday night. And, you know, so I spent hours. I want to say 30, 40 hours, like, writing this sermon that I was so proud of. And, you know, got up there to the congregation. The rabbi was sitting in the pews. And, you know, I delivered this sermon based on the Torah portion that I thought was just really amazing. And the feedback I got was not what I wanted to hear. You know, the feedback I got was, you know, it was great. It was fine, but it was not, you gave me nothing. You know, you gave me, you know, if it was an intellectual or academic paper,
sure.
Look, you nailed it. It was great. You gave me that history, but you gave me nothing about who you are.
Right.
And I have never stopped thinking about that comment that was said so many years ago of, you know, that rabbi was right. I gave something, but I guarded myself because I was afraid. I was afraid on if I reveal too much, what is too much or what is too little? And I remember struggling and saying to the rabbi, and we had long conversations about it, about, you know, how much do I reveal? You know, when is too much? And I remember the rabbi saying, you have to bring yourself into it. You know, we can talk about the Torah portion. We can talk about the themes. We can talk about the values, the ethics of what we are to discern from it and what we're supposed to learn from it and how we live our lives. But unless you bring yourself into it and actually give me as a congregant or as a one who comes for a worship experience the ability to identify and empathize with you, we're just scratching the surface.
And they got to hear your story, right? They got to hear Rabbi Durbin's story. Father Christian has to give a piece of a story. And that's the same. I had the same lesson that blew me away, too. The first time in my internship where I actually, in a sermon, referred to my own insecurities over my intelligence. And I come from a very smart family. I always felt like I was playing catch up with everyone in my family. And so that's the reason why, you know, I would love to get a doctorate degree so I could finally feel I'm smart, because everyone else has got some form of a doctorate in my family. To open up about my own insecurity about that. And that's the one sermon where finally everyone came up afterwards and said, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. They're like, because people can identify with their own insecurities, their own losses, and know you as a person who's following God and giving your life to God and committing your whole vocation to God. That warms their heart to know. And our priest recently, the rector, really, he opened up about a time of depression, right? And so it's all public knowledge, the sermons up online and everything. But my gosh, everyone was crying and everyone was weeping, and it helped them to say, wait a minute, if this guy who looks like he's got it all together, who's got this incredible relationship with God, if he had a time in his life that he was going through depression, boy, does that give me strength mm-hmm. right now to know that
I'm not alone.
I'm not alone. Absolutely. And I can get through this too. He got through this. And here's the thing. I think Nadia Boltz-Weber, she's a big famous Lutheran pastor who has a huge background. She dealt with drugs. She was a stand-up comic. She's clean now. And she says the most important thing for you to do now is as a preacher is that you always preach from your scars. You don't preach from your wounds. So if you haven't dealt with the stuff yet, I again, it's like the one-man show. If I hadn't moved forward and transformed and matured, and I'm doing it, that's a little risky as a priest, right?
And I also think, you know, look, you were born not with the term Reverend Anderson, right? You were born, forgive the pun, but you were born Christian,
mm-hmm.
right? And I have this conversation with former congregants of mine in New York, where they will still refer to me as rabbi, and I will say, no, you know, please, like, just call me Matt. I can't do that. And I remember saying, I earned the title rabbi. I went to school. I studied more, and, you know, I earned the title rabbi. But my parents named me what they named me. They named me Matthew. And years ago, I remember traveling to Berlin. And Berlin is, it's an amazing city. It's a unique city. It's a very interesting city. But I guess around 15, 20 years ago, they started a liberal seminary for training of rabbis, right? Based in the city center of Berlin was their vocational spiritual formation, and the academic was at Potsdam University, just outside Berlin. And as you walk into their space, there is a big banner that is hanging on their walls. I'm not sure if it's still hanging there, but at least the time that I was there, it was. And it said, "Rabbis are human beings." Right? And it really has that notion that rabbis, priests, clergy, we have a backstory. We have a history. Right? If we spend so much time learning the history of our membership, is it not important for our members and our communities to also hear our story? Because I think it's exactly like you said, right? If I'm sitting there in the pew and my rabbi is struggling with a challenge that I myself am struggling with, but maybe my insecurity makes it so I don't want to be vocal about it, and it's plaguing or sitting on me, it gives me a sense of inner calm. It gives me a sense that, hey, my rabbi is not perfect. Of course, we know nobody is perfect. You know, we all make mistakes. We all err in some way. Right. But being able to hear that publicly kind of gives me that sense of community. Wow, my rabbi is struggling. I never thought that my rabbi would be struggling.
Now, you're saying struggling like struggling in the moment, right? There's one thing where in your sermon or in your time in your talk that you're talking about previous experiences that you were in a rough spot, that you were dealing with sin, dealing with whatever. Now, what if it's like in the present moment? And we see this now with pastors, with people who are clergy members who are in the midst of dealing with something and they hide it because they're so afraid that if I reveal this to my flock, that they're going to lose a lot of faith, and I can't do that because it's going to be embarrassing and humiliating, right? If I'm wrestling with something, wrestling with an anxiety disorder, wrestling with addiction, whatever it may be, if I expose it, and you might lose your job, right? In some places, if you say, like, hey, I want to let everyone know I'm dealing with this, or you're dealing with marital issues and there's a separation, I mean, that It also, you're the one who's supposed to have it all together, mm-hmm. right? And so now here you are at leading this parish and saying you're the one who's supposed to be the model. We've seen examples where you hide it, mm-hmm. and then it later comes out, and somehow famous pastor Stephen Furtick had to deal with addiction, and he was dealing with alcohol, mega church guy, but he was able to turn it and say, and just lay his cards out and just say, I am a drunk and life just got too crazy. And he was able to land on his feet through that, where people identified with it, right? But mm-hmm. it can be tricky. I can understand that if you're not some big mega pastor with all the stuff around you, that if you're the lone soldier up there and start revealing that you're wrestling with something, maybe something that's very embarrassing too, you know, when not every parish is going to maybe accept you with open arms, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, if that's the struggle you have, probably as any leader.
Struggle, too, of how much of that veil do we reveal, right? The notion of is it a very thick sheet that we put that distances us, or is it, you know, a clear sheet that says, let me tell you, through my experience, through the opportunities that presented itself through my life, that this is what I may be struggling with. Or, as you said, at a given moment. You know, I know that there have been many times through worship experiences, you know, we have on our liturgy, certainly on Friday nights and certainly Saturday, you know, we do a prayer for healing, right? For God's healing. And there are times where if incidences do occur, whether it be challenges with the state of Israel, when they've been under emergency situations, that, you know, I will pray for the state of Israel and I will choke up. I mean, I'll get very emotional. Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, the vulnerability is good, but like, let's say you were going through, I mean, I had one time where I had so much on my mind and I was really struggling, and I knew there was a small group of people, of leaders who I work with in the church, and then I said, can you guys pray with me after tonight's session? We do this Alpha course, and I was like, afterwards, can you guys all pray for me? That was scary for me, right? That I'm trusting this small group of people. Because at the time, I was, you know, still, I think it was only my second year of being a priest, to say, I need you all to pray for me. I need you to all lay some hands on me. It's, you know, the tradition we do in the church, you lay hands on and you pray for the Holy Spirit to come upon. And because normally, if I was at any other church as a parishioner, I would ask the leaders of the church to pray over me. So now I'm a priest. Do I go to another church, go to another place where no one knows me with anonymity and say, hey, can you all pray with me because I'm about to open up in my brokenness? Or do I turn to my own flock and go to the leaders and say, I need you all to pray for me? And then I was worried, like, what if that word gets out? What if the word gets out? Oh, Father Christian's going through some stuff. We all prayed for him. Do people start to lose credibility, start to lose faith, or do people start to talk and start to worry? You know, that's that whole thing, right? That I don't know the perfect answer. I think you got to play it in the moment. But, you know, but I do think you and I are trying to figure this out. What is that right and healthy balance? Mm-hmm. What is that healthy balance? What you don't want to do is be completely put a wall up and make it seem like that everything's all okay, because that's not going to help anyone. And it kind of hurts your ministry because people like to see. I mean, how comfortable would you be? Let's go back to the previous thing about just your previous experiences, being a young buck, exploring life. You also have a school, you know, at the temple. Mm-hmm. I would assume there's a governor you want to place over how much you reveal there, because you don't want people to get the wrong idea, or, you know, I don't know your whole past, but are there times when you feel like, maybe that's not best for everyone to know? You know?
Well, I think part of it is also discretion, right? You know, we think to ourselves, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate? And I think, you know, through all of our lives, I think we can all go through moments that, you know, I think for me, revealing information or parts of my past, I do spend a lot of time thinking, would this or is this helpful for somebody who may be challenged or may be struggling with something? Can I help, aid in some way, or guide somebody through support that through my own experiences may help them come more to grips and more to terms with what they are going through?
So what I'm hearing here, the big question is it about them and God, or is it about me? Mm-hmm. That's the question,
absolutely,
right? And I think that's the meditation I have right now about the one-man show, right? I got to make sure that the show I'm putting out is not just about me getting excited to tell the story about me, but really now it's grown to a part where really it's about, there's a ministerial aspect to it. It's really about shedding light for God, and hopefully that it could be an empowering and thought-provoking message for others. It's not just all about me. It's a vanity thing. And I think as an actor, in my line of work, you know, that you always have to ask yourself that question, because it's a very vain profession. You're in the business of yourself, right? And to make sure, and I think I had someone challenge me on that, just make sure this is not about you, right? You doing the show, or you of Rabbi Durbin, that you're going to bring up your past and talk about this. It's not about you telling your story. I'm telling you the story because I want you, this other person who's in your office, to take a leap with me. That's a big question we always got to ask ourselves. And you know, whenever you see someone where they're making it about themselves.
But I think, even to go back on your show, I mean, I think, look, the first impression was, this is about you. This
I
is
know,
your
it's
story.
An autobiography.
Right? I mean, it's your story.
Yeah.
And I think at the end, we get this impression that it's really not so much about you as it is about, you know, the personal journey towards acceptance and understanding of there are others in our midst that are challenged, that I have the very fortunate and blessed opportunity to be a guide to somebody else, and your way of becoming that guide happened to be from non-conventional ways of going into an industry like, you know, the clubbing industry in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And the struggle I have is just like, I don't want to sit there and be like, oh, that was just a horrible line of work, and now I found Jesus, now I'm all better. Because that's just getting the black and white thinking, right, in our life. And now, I mean, people more than ever now want so much authenticity, right? And they can smell it away, especially with religious leaders. Mm-hmm. They need authenticity. Michael's shaking his head, yes, our producer, right? That there's been so much. Religion in America has gone through, you know, a rough spot here, and we've seen a lot of leaders come and, you know, fall, and that hasn't helped with from millennial on to Gen Y, Gen Z, a lack of trust in a lot of institutions, but a lot of in the religious institution. And so to have a religious leader, your authenticity is so key right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll sniff it out. Before, it was like totally acceptable. You go to church, this is what you do. It's a culture. You go to synagogue. Now it's like you only go if you really, really want to go, because culturally it's not totally, there's no pressure to go, right? Mm-hmm. So authenticity is so key. And I don't know about you, but I'm still finding the balance now that I've done this show that really exposes what I was like beforehand. When is how far is too far? You know, and I'm just really curious to see from other folks. And listen, if you're listening to this on the podcast, you know, to leave a comment on the podcast about your experience with that, whether you're clergy or whether you're not clergy, of how much authenticity do you want from your rabbi, from your priest, from your pastor? How much is too much, and how much do you want to know?
But also, how much is too little in terms of, you know, having a reveal? You know, you use it in ways to try and connect people with your past to where people are sitting and where they are. And for others, perhaps in the pews, to say, you know, really impactful, really powerful. I just wish you would have given me more, mm-hmm. right? But of course, that balance between giving more and not being, you know, explosive of, whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't need to know
too
that.
Much, too buddy, much, buddy. TMI. I mean, if I'm trying to look at biblical characters, and I know we're about to wrap up the show here, that, you know, look to David, look to Moses. These are key figures that we do look to and say they did some, I mean, especially David, who wasn't winning Husband of the Year Award anytime soon, right? Did some pretty rough stuff there, but also is lifted up in literally biblical proportions of being these great leaders that as Jews and Christians, we look to. Moses killed someone, right? He did it in the name of protecting his people, right? But still, does that help us as believers to know when we see these broken characters in the Bible, does Paul as a Christian who was basically a terrorist, who was chasing down and killing Christians, does it help us for those who'd be like, wow, if he could go through that and make his way? I mean, there's that openness there, and I think that's what we call our testimony. So anyhow, listen, this has been a fun and exciting show, and Rabbi, thank you for taking the reins on this one of just coming at me about the Woodman Show. It's, I think, an ongoing meditation that I know I need to continue lifting up, and I thank you for your support and giving a lot of feedback on it. It helps me to see where does this go, where's the right place for the show, and when is too much. And where it's the proper place for it, and make sure that's not about me, and it's really, really about God. Absolutely. And about others.
So as we go through this transitional period, as we just unpack this, if you would like to join us at Temple Beit Hayam this Saturday, tomorrow night at 6:00, we will be having a reception and just kind of a social opportunity. We call it our service of Slichot. It is a service of forgiveness. It is traditionally the Shabbat just before Rosh Hashanah, which will be next Sunday evening. If you are available, we'd love to have you. We are Temple Beit Hayam. We have a lot of programs and a lot of activities coming down this year, as I know you guys do as well, and anything we can do together to bridge that that gap, we would greatly appreciate.
We love it. So thank you so much for tuning in. And if you ever want to support this show, it's just supported by awesome listeners like yourself. Please give us an email. yourfavoritechristian@gmail.com is probably the best way to do it, of how you can get and advertise on here. It supports the show. It is a ministry that we do here in Stuart and also for the podcast. So send us an email of how you can support it. If you want a 30-second spot, a 2-minute spot, 5 minutes, not a 5-minute spot, but in any event, God bless you. We love you, and we'll see you out there in the kingdom. Peace.